please the court. Jared Steed appearing on behalf of the appellant Joshua Monson. I'd like to reserve three minutes for rebuttal, please. The issue in this case turns on the trial court's refusal to excuse a juror for bias. The trial court has a continuous obligation to dismiss jurors who are unfit by reason of bias or prejudice.
And you're relying on RCW 2, is that correct, and the court rule?
Your Honor, we're relying on both RCW 2 and Criminal Rule 6.5.
Correct.
Actual bias exists when a juror's state of mind prevents them from trying the case impartially and without prejudice to the substantial rights of the accused.
To cut to the chase, what are the facts that you are relying on in the record that establishes that the juror could not be fair, as distinguished your case, Thompson?
Absolutely. Well, I think there are three things, Your Honor, and I'll start with the first. The first goes to her state of mind, Juror 6 here. We have her reporting a concern to the bailiff and then to the trial court that, an apparent otherwise innocent sort of lock of the eyes in the parking lot on the last day of a weekend recess somehow went back to the facts of this case. And that innocent eye lock caused her to specifically fear for her safety as it pertained to my client's associates and whether or not they may attempt to influence her. So that's the first thing. The second thing that we have here is her equivocal answers, wherein she states that she thinks she can be fair. And she doesn't think...
Well, her answers don't appear to be equivocal at all, given the transcript here. Can you quote a specific page?
Sure.
Where she equivocates, as in Thompson, continuously when asked about her ability to set aside any perceived fear and decide the case.
Absolutely,
fair.
Your Honor, and I would point to 10th volume of the Report of Proceedings as cited in my brief, page 14. Specifically, I'm looking at her phrases that when questioned about whether or not her fear would make it difficult to remain neutral.
What page of the transcript are you looking at?
Your Honor, I am looking at page 14, I believe.
Okay.
So, and I'll just read what it says here, specifically the language that I'm saying. When questioned by defense counsel, the juror says, "You're saying that I can, I will, I already have thought. Have that thought to be impartial because of my fear. Is that what you're saying, defense counsel? That's what I'm trying to find out. Yeah, I don't think so." Defense counsel again. So what's going to happen, in summary, is that this case goes forward and there are more witnesses called. You think about things that have happened that may be unpleasant and may be frightening. You see more people that are upsetting. Do you think it will be more of an issue or less of an issue? Juror 6, I think it will be fair. So what we have in this case is a less than certainty couple of statements here by Juror 6 when based upon further questioning that the best she can do is say that she does not think her fear would affect her decision making and that she thinks she could be fair as the case progresses.
Don't you think that on a flat record such as this, the trial court's in the best position to assess the demeanor and manner within which we are to assess this evidence?
Well, Your Honor, I certainly think that this court is obviously not in a position to sort of examine the demeanor. That doesn't make it into the transcript here. But I will note that, defense counsel notes here that Juror 6's demeanor was not neutral. And that assertion by defense counsel is not disputed by either the prosecutor or the trial court. And specifically when the trial court, on page 97, I believe it is, makes its findings that, he believes that Juror 6 can remain. He doesn't say that an assessment of her demeanor and her answers are what causes him to arrive at that point.
What's the legal standard that you're applying here for bias under RCW 2?
Well, Your Honor, it is an abuse of discretion standard. The trial court, whether or not...
Well, the fairness standard, in other words, isn't the standard, the common law standard interpreting RCW 2, whether or not the juror can set aside any perceived bias and decide the case on the law and the facts.
Correct. And I think that the juror's state of mind here, coupled with her, you know, equivocal answers, as well as an undisputed sort of assessment as to what her demeanor is, shows that she can't. And those are really the three facts that we're citing to here, is we're citing to, again, a otherwise innocent sort of encounter in a parking lot, which she is somehow automatically connecting to the facts of this case, and specifically my client, as to how his associates may or may not attempt to influence her decision. We have her, you know, not unequivocal answers that the best she can do here is she thinks she can be fair, and she doesn't think her fears are going to affect her ability to remain impartial. And then again, we have the undisputed assessment by defense counsel that her demeanor is not neutral. That's not, again, disputed by the prosecutor or by the trial court. And the trial court's basis for finding that she can remain fair and impartial doesn't go to her demeanor. The trial court explicitly says, based on her answers, not her answers and her demeanor, but her answers, I'm satisfied that she can remain on the jury. And I think those three facts taken together show that in this particular instance, under the facts of this case, this juror was not in a position to remain on the jury because of her state of mind. I will note that, you know, there were three alternates in this case who could have easily subbed in for her. And in fact, that's what defense counsel requested. It was not
a mistrial. That's not part of the standard, though, is it?
No, Your Honor, but I think that's a factor to consider here, is that this issue could have easily been remedied at the time with little inconvenience to anybody. And so, you know, the lack of certainty in this case, it's our opinion, distinguishes it from the cases relied upon the state. Juror 6's state of mind towards my client prevented her from impartially trying the case, thereby depriving my client of his right to a fair, impartial jury. And, you know, for those reasons, we would ask that the court grant Mr. Monson a new trial. And I'll save the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
May it please the court, I'm Seth Fine representing the state. The standards governing this case, I think, are not in dispute. A juror's emotional reaction to the case does not automatically disqualify her for service, whether that reaction be fear, revulsion, sympathy, or whatever. The juror is disqualified if that emotional state prevents her from impartially performing her duties as a juror, and she is not disqualified if the emotional state does not have that effect. The decision of which one it is a matter for the trial court, who alone sees and hears the jury and is in a better position, certainly, than this court to make that determination. And here, you know, we have a juror who is carefully questioned, asserts that she can be fair, and the trial court accepts that. You know, great weight is being placed here on the juror's supposedly equivocal answer, specifically twice her use of the expression, I think. You know, that has very little weight. I think is sometimes a measure of hesitation, and sometimes it's just a figure of speech. There's a huge difference between I think I can be fair and I think I can be fair. That those words on the printed page are exactly the same, and that's why we have to defer to the trial judge. There is no case that puts talismanic significance on the juror's use of the phrase, I think. And moreover, you know, the juror did not consistently use that phrase and twice expressed herself in more positive terms, you know, questioned by the court. You know, is there anything about your experience, the experience in the parking lot that you described, that would affect your ability to be a fair and impartial juror in this case? Juror's answer, with that, no, it's not. That's page 11 of volume 6 of the report of proceedings. Note, by the way, that I'm using the court reporter's volume designations, which are different than the number that counsel has used. And then again, on page 13, defense counsel says, you know, referring to her expressions of concern for her safety, that's the kind of thing I'm going to guess that would make it hard for you to feel neutral about Mr. Monson and the charge. And her answer is, I don't see it that way. You know, there is nothing equivocal about this juror's assertion that she could be a fair juror, notwithstanding this expressions and this experience and these, you know, quite natural feelings of concern for her personal safety, given the nature of the testimony and some of the witnesses in this case. Her positive assurance that she can be fair, which the trial court accepts. You know, this is a classic discretionary ruling. If the trial court had said, you know, notwithstanding these assurances, the court is not confident she can be fair as a juror, the court could properly discharge her, or the court can say, accepting these assurances and believing them, I think she can be an impartial juror. And again, this court has no basis to overturn it. Now, the final factor that's invoked here is in defense counsel's remarks about her demeanor. Of course, it's not for defense counsel to judge, but for the court. And it's true the court didn't say in so many words, I think her demeanor shows that she can be fair, but clearly, the court accepted the accuracy of the assurances that she made.
Well, but how else would we get to such an issue if the court's just blowing it off and being unfair when defense counsel says, hey, look, here's how she's acting. The court's not even responsive.
There's no rule that says that the court must specifically respond to the statement of defense counsel, make specific findings about their demeanor, even if the court is, you know, entering findings, even in situations where the court has to enter written findings. Of course, this isn't one of them, but if the court enters a finding, you know, I accept the testimony of witness X and reject the testimony of witness Y, there is no requirement that the court write down, because the testimony of witness X, the demeanor of witness X showed that her testimony was credible. And if defense counsel says an argument that this witness's demeanor in testifying shows that he wasn't telling the truth, you know, and the court says, I find that testimony to be credible, this court won't assume that, well, actually the demeanor showed the witness was lying, and therefore the court's findings were wrong. You know, there's just no requirement that the court specifically address counsel's comments about demeanor. We have to assume that an experienced trial judge took all the circumstances, including, in this case, the juror's demeanor, in assessing the credibility of the statement that she could be a fair juror. Well, this is a straightforward exercise of trial court discretion based on observing, in this case, a juror, but a person recounting facts and making critical factual determinations. And since that's a proper exercise of discretion and there are no other challenges raised to the conviction, this should be affirmed.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors. I don't have a whole lot to add, but again, I would note that, you know, the finding in this case is not just based, or the issue in this case is not just based on sort of the equivocal answers that were maintaining the juror gave, but three things. Again, the state of mind of her, you know, attaching this innocent sort of interaction in the parking lot back to this case, her equivocal answers, and again, the undisputed demeanor finding. Now, the state suggests that there is an explicit requirement that the court enter a finding as to demeanor, but it is undisputed that the trial court place, or the, you know, reviewing courts place great weight on the demeanor assessment that is made at the time in determining bias for potential jurors. And again, here we have defense counsel making an observation.
The deference to the trial court's determination, not to counsel's determination.
But the trial court isn't disputing counsel's determination here. The
trial court's ignoring counsel's determination.
Perhaps, Your Honor. But again, we don't have an explicit finding as to demeanor figuring into the
trial. There's no case that requires that. It adheres in the trial court's exercise of discretion with regard to the jury's ability to be fair and unbiased. And that's why we defer, because we aren't there, but the trial court is.
That's true, Your Honor. But again,
it's not the defense counsel to make a record if he wants to try to disagree with the court. But what we don't have is we don't have back and forth between counsel at trial and trial judges. It doesn't happen very often. If it does, it's unfortunate.
That's correct, Your Honor. But again, here, I mean, that's just one of three things that's being taken into consideration in the grant.
That's our point. It is one of three things. It inheres in the whole determination. And the trial court made the determination. You are repeating yourself.
Okay. Well, with that, Your Honor, unless the court has other questions, I will sit down then. Thank you.
That's the choice.